I'm Brad Linder, and this is Newsworks Tonight. Dave Heller's off this evening. After Labor Day, SEPTA plans to offer some express bus service along heavily traveled regional rail routes to alleviate expected overcrowding on the trains. SEPTA's Mike Liberi says the service will give commuters options to get into and out of Philadelphia during rush hour, since fewer trains are available.
We would like to have our full complement of rail cars back as soon as possible, but we don't have a target date yet for that. And it's a timetable that we continue to explore.
Officials are still working on a permanent fix for the damaged rail cars, which Liberi says could come as soon as next week. Philadelphia's new tax on soda and other sweetened beverages is being praised by public health experts who hope it means people will consume less sugar. WHYY's Katie Culinary reports researchers found that's what happened in Berkeley, California, the first American city to pass a soda tax.
Christine Madsen and her team of researchers at the University of California, Berkeley, surveyed hundreds of people in low-income neighborhoods about their beverage consumption. Madsen says that's because soda companies tend to target those areas for advertising.
And it's also true that in low-income neighborhoods and for Latino and African-American families, we see a much greater proportion of the diseases like obesity and diabetes.
After the penny per ounce tax took effect last year, the researchers found soda consumption in Berkeley dropped by 20%, while the number of those who reported drinking water increased by about 60%. Philadelphia's tax rate is slightly higher at 1.5 cents per ounce, and it also applies to diet drinks. Still, Madsen thinks the city will see results similar to Berkeley's.
My expectation then is that Philly, where people are, you know, going to be switching beverages, will probably also shift to more water. And that, from a public health perspective, is actually the best outcome.
As you might expect, the soda industry is panning the study. A spokeswoman for the American Beverage Association says it doesn't prove Berkeley's tax is having a measurable impact on public health. Despite the threat of a lawsuit from the association to stop it, Philadelphia's sweetened drinks tax is expected to go into effect in January. Katie Culinary, WHYY News.
A new study finds that white children access mental health care services at a much higher rate than their Black and Latino peers. From WHYY's Behavioral Health Desk, Ann Hoffman has details.
The authors of the study in the International Journal of Health Services were interested in why kids of color are more likely to be incarcerated or suspended from school. Many incarcerated kids suffer from mental illness, so the researchers looked at inequalities in mental health care delivery. By examining 6 years of national data from Health and Human Services, they found that white kids access services at a rate higher than kids of color.
What we found was that for Black and Hispanic children, much fewer visits were made to psychiatrists and other mental health professionals. And this was not because they needed less care, because Black and white children had similar rates of mental health problems.
That's lead author Dr. Lindana Marast of Hofstra University. The reasons for these disparities, she says, are many, ranging from a lack of providers in some neighborhoods to stigma against seeing a counselor to the possibility that doctors make fewer referrals for kids of color. The study's authors write, quote, youthful transgressions that might result in referral for treatment among non-minority children more often incur criminal sanctions for minorities, end quote. To be clear, the data doesn't provide a definitive link between less mental health care and incarceration, but Maras says she and her team are making an inference. For Flossie Irardi, who heads the music therapy master's program at Drexel University, that resonates with patterns she's seen in her own 20-year practice. She's worked at a juvenile detention facility where most of the kids are Black or Latino, even though the larger suburb where it's located is mostly white. In her experience, music therapy made a noticeable difference for some kids there.
And there were some kids who just took to music therapy very well, and you could see their strengths come out. Their affect just really changed, and you could see a spring in their step as they were walking out of the room.
She says she thinks that has to do with the fact that in music therapy, the focus is not so much what did you do as it is in a law enforcement context, and more what happened to you. Marast from Hofstra thinks providing more training to mental health professionals, recruiting more providers of color, and adopting what she calls a less punitive attitude toward youthful misbehavior could all make a difference. For WHYY News, I'm Ann Hoffman.
It's been tough for Delaware Republicans to win statewide races, with so many more registered Democrats in the state. But Republican State Senator Colin Bonini hopes to overcome that and become Delaware's next governor. From WHYY's Delaware desk, Mark Eichmann reports, first Bonini has to win the Republican primary on September 13th.
Delaware's off course. We can write this shit.
Inside a private room at a Dover pizzeria, Delaware State Senator Colin Bonini made his campaign pitch to a gathering of Kent County Republicans.
One more time. Delaware deserves better.
Delaware
Benigni is running for governor for a simple reason.
Delaware is in decline, and I want to stop it. And I love Delaware. Delaware has been such a blessing to me and my wife.
He served as a state senator from Dover South since 1994. He's been perhaps the most vocal opponent of increased state spending, frequently voting against the state budget. And while Benigni may agree on a number of issues with his opponent in the Republican primary, former state trooper Lacey Lafferty, there are stark differences in these two Republicans.
But I think the biggest difference is I'm in the arena. Lots of people talk about being a conservative leader. Lots of people talk about standing up to big government. Lots of people talk about taking the tough votes. I've been doing it for 20 years.
Even though there are 100,000 more Democrats in Delaware, Benigni almost was elected state treasurer in 2010. He got 49% of the vote in that statewide race, a campaign experience he sees as evidence that he could give Democratic candidate John Carney a tough fight in November. Benigni got a boost in exposure in April when he was asked to speak at a Donald Trump rally just days before the state's presidential primary.
And the only way to fix this government here in Delaware and in Washington, D.C., is by strong, principled leadership. And that is why I am not just proud to be here, I am thrilled to be here and support and endorse the next president of the United States of America, Donald J. Trump.
I think Donald Trump's a lot more conservative than folks give him credit for. I also, by the way, think he's going to right that ship and is going to put together a very good campaign.
Just like his primary opponent, Benigni sees Delaware in a deep state of decline.
I'm really, really worried about Delaware. We have an economy that's in the tank. We have the lowest income growth in the country. One in six Delawareans is on food stamps. One in five children in Delaware live in poverty. You know, our public education needs help. Crime in Wilmington. I mean, Delaware, regardless of what you look at, Delaware is in decline, and I want to stop it.
Over the next few weeks, Benigni will be unveiling his plans to fix the state, his Delaware to-do list.
Delaware is really, really needs to change course. The good news is that it's absolutely fixable. We have some wonderful strengths here in Delaware, but we really have to change the direction the state's going.
The winner of the September 13th primary will face John Carney in November. Carney has been Delaware's lone representative in the U.S. House since 2010 and is unopposed in the Democratic primary. From the Delaware Desk, I'm Mark Eichmann, WHYY News.
Go to newsworks.org for profiles of Colin Benigni and his opponent, Lacey Lafferty. We aired a story about her on our program yesterday.
Matchmaker, matchmaker.
Still ahead. These days, the internet makes all kinds of matches. Riders with Uber drivers, diners with restaurant reservations, and of course, dates for Saturday night. So why not musicians?
I was really delighted when this announcement popped up, looking for a composer.
A website creates a transatlantic music match. That's coming up as Newsworks Tonight continues on WHYY.
Nobody had heard of Zika 2 years ago. Kind of came out of nowhere, except it really didn't.
We know what wildlife carry these pathogens. We know where they are on the planet. We know who really is going to be the first to get infected.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Stopping outbreaks before they start. That is next time on Marketplace.
Marketplace follows Newsworks Tonight at 6:30 this evening on WHYY.
Pine Run Community in Doylestown supports WHYY and celebrates 40 years as a resident-focused senior living community. Proud to be a member of Doylestown Health and committed to promoting health and wellness in the region, Pine Run brings together all generations through employment, retirement living, and rehabilitation. More about career opportunities, becoming a resident, or rehabilitation in their newly renovated health center is available online at pinerun.org.
Welcome back to Newsworks Tonight. I'm Brad Linder, in for Dave Heller. Over the past few years, astronomers have discovered thousands of planets circling distant stars. But yesterday, astronomers announced you might not need to look very far to find a planet capable of supporting life as we know it. An Earth-sized planet that scientists say could be habitable is circling our sun's nearest neighbor. Villanova Astronomy and Planetary Science Professor Edward Guinan is part of the team studying the habitability of Proxima b, and he joins us by Skype. Thanks for speaking with us.
Thanks for having me.
And Villanova Professor Scott Engel is also a member of the team, and he joins us by phone. Thanks for speaking with us.
Thank you for having me.
So, Edward, what do we know about Proxima b?
Proxima b is a planet that's been discovered yesterday, hosted around a red dwarf. It's about 1.2, 1.3 times the mass of the Earth, so it's very close in size, and it's in the distance of the planet is in the habitable zone. That's where you can have liquid water on the planet's surface. So that's what's known about it. They know its orbital properties. That's a period of, it takes 11 days to go around the star, and that's probably very close to what is the rotation speed. So a day on this planet would take about an Earth day.
So it rotates the sun once every 11 days. It spins differently than the Earth. So one day and one year would basically be about the same thing?
Exactly, yeah.
So we know that the planet's a little bit, is different in a lot of ways to Earth, but that the climate, hopefully, is something that an Earthling could survive. But if you were born, Scott, on this planet, what would your life be like?
It would be very, very different, to say the least. So you have, Mercury is the closest planet to our sun. And it is somewhere around what we call an astronomical unit in AU. It's a 0.3 to 0.5 or so AUs away from the sun. This planet is 0.05 AUs away from Proxima Centauri. So you're very, very close to the star. Now, that's not too big a deal in terms of optical light, the light that we can see, because this star is very small and it's much cooler than the sun. So you need a planet to be that close to it in order to be warm enough to hopefully have liquid water on its surface. One of the problems is that as you get closer, Proxima Centauri, even though it's smaller than the sun, it puts out a lot less optical light. It's ultraviolet and X-ray radiation, what we call the high-energy radiation that's given off. It is just about as strong, actually, as the sun is. It's somewhere, it's much more comparable than the optical light is. So you've moved the planet in close to make it nice and warm, but it's also now getting a good bit of high-energy radiation. So the star would be sitting motionless in your sky. The same side of this planet could be constantly facing the star. So you wouldn't have a sunrise and a sunset. You'd actually have to travel around your planet in order to see the Proxima actually set and rise.
So we talk about how close this is, and I think a lot of people are very excited because it's the closest potentially habitable planet that's been discovered so far. But it's still pretty far away, right?
Yes, it is. The fastest speed that we have actually achieved with any sort of interplanetary mission or anything like that, I believe it'll take something like 19,000 years to get there.
There are systems being developed, plasma engines and yes, solar sails, that could propel a mission to Proxima Centauri at up to about one-tenth the speed of light. This is in the coming years. So you could arrive there, not me people, but an instrument could arrive there in 50 years.
And before we get there, my understanding is that with telescopes, we might be able to find out more about this planet. I know that you guys are looking for more information already to figure out, could it really be habitable? How does that happen with telescopes?
Well, we have that capability almost now. One of the scenarios, one of our paper deals with, is that this ends up as there's three scenarios, three pathways. It turns out to be a planet with water, turns out to be a planet like Mercury with nothing, no atmosphere at all, or the third possibility is like Venus, a carbon dioxide planet. So if we could isolate this planet with one of these new missions, we could tell the difference. And if it did turn out to have water, vapor, things like that, then it would be really exciting to maybe develop a mission that could fly there.
So how does this discovery change our understanding of the universe?
One thing, there's lots of other, this isn't it. This is the nearest one to us, but Kepler predicted, the Kepler mission predicted that within one out of four, red dwarf stars should have a planet in the habitable zone. And it's kind of coming true. And if within 10 light years of us, or say 30 light years of us, there should be 30 to 40 more of these orbiting red dwarf stars. So it isn't just Proxima. It may be an indicator. That statistical study that Kepler made is correct, and there's a lot of these planets.
Villanova professors Scott Engel and Edward Guinan are studying the habitability of Proxima b, a planet 4 light years away, which scientists think might be capable of supporting life. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
This weekend, two aspiring musical theater artists will debut their show in Philadelphia. The composer lives in Philadelphia, and the lyricist lives in Rome. Before this week, they'd never met in person. From WHYY's Arts and Culture Desk, Peter Crimmins reports on a matchmaking website for musical collaborations.
Nino Pratico lives in Rome. He's 23, he's studying law, and nursing a deep love of American musical theater. He wrote a story and lyrics for a musical about Carlo Collodi, the man who created Pinocchio. He did this in his spare time, sometimes during class in law school. Pratico calls himself an amateur.
I define myself as an amateur because in Italian, amateur means someone who loves what he's doing. Even if this is not my profession, I love what I'm doing, so I think this is better than this being my profession.
Pratico needed a composer, but composers are hard to find in law school, so he went online. A website called mercurymusicals.com allows writers and musicians to find each other for projects, much like a dating website. This is how he found David Kerkowski in Philadelphia.
We're considerably different in age, as you can see. I'm 68, he's 23, so he could be my grandson.
Kerkowski only recently started writing music after he retired as a market researcher. Working in isolation, he says he's written many songs for musicals that don't exist.
I was really delighted when this announcement popped up looking for a composer, and he actually specified that it was in the Disney Rodgers and Hammerstein Lerner and Lowe style. That's the style I write in.
We have but one lifetime to live all our day, so why waste time growing old?
I couldn't write in Hamilton style or Rent. I'm too old for that.
These songs are written entirely through email as the two sent lyrics and recordings back and forth over the Atlantic Ocean. This May-December pairing of lyricist and composer is unusual in an industry where writing teams normally form in music school or on the job.
I was a little scared because of the age difference. But when he sent me the song, I understood that he was the man.
Pratico and Kerkowski are presenting Collodi as a staged reading on Sunday at the Arden Theater in Philadelphia, and they're fundraising for a second reading in New York, where they hope to catch the attention of a producer. I'm Peter Crimmins, WHYY News.
In more theater news, we now turn to New Hope, where the Bucks County Playhouse is staging Cake Off. What came to be known as the Pillsbury Bake Off began in 1949 with a grand prize of $50,000. In 1996, that amount jumped to $1 million, and suddenly men clamored to get in. That's the basis for a new musical that parodies the baking contest and positions the event as a war between the sexes. Newsworks theater blogger Howard Shapiro has this review.
I wouldn't give Cake Off $1 million grand prize, but it certainly gets more than honorable mention. Its three creators, Sherry Wilner, Julia Jordan, and Adam Guan, offer up a show that's often sweet, spongy enough to be bouncy, yet far too moist at a jarringly serious ending that comes after a comic romp. At that point, it's like a cake falling in the oven, but for the rest of the time, Cake Off is a lot of fun. It's set in 1996 on the baking floor of the Millsbury Cake Off, which looks suspiciously like the real one, right down to the Millsbury logo. The show is about the baking competition, but it's also about the men who suddenly show up as competitors because of the new $1 million prize. This battle unfolds as we witness two contestants who are both sad sacks. One's a veteran cake-off competitor, long divorced from her husband and long detached from any dreams she had for herself. The other is a man, a currently divorcing health worker with a sullen teenage son. After a time, we see that cake-off is not just about baking, it's about competing on equal footing and winning. The fine four-member cast includes Justin Guarini. He stands out, playing three roles, two of them as women. The cast is accompanied only by a piano, so the musical arrangements seem thin. The script is fun, except for those last few serious minutes, and several of the lyrics elicit laughs. Gay Taylor Upchurch's direction keeps things moving. Cake Off turns baking into a mildly goofy discourse on gender, competition, and regrets. It runs through September 10th at Bucks County Playhouse. For WHYY, I'm Howard Shapiro.
That's all for tonight's show. Newsworks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yakov, Kimberly Haas, and Brett Rader. Find us on iTunes or listen back at newsworks.org. Tomorrow is National Dog Day. You may know all your dog's endearing little habits, and now researchers at the University of Pennsylvania School of Veterinary Medicine want you to share. They're seeking citizen scientists to contribute to a database of canine behavior. We'll speak with the lead scientist on tomorrow's show. Thanks for joining us. I'm Brad Linder for NewsWorks Tonight.